and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. Some women in South Sudan say men have taken 35% of their power-sharing quota.
I just came from Ngok and started this business 3 days ago. I hired the donkey and later shared the money with the owner. I have not been enrolled in school, but I shall enroll soon.
And South Sudan's economic crisis has taken toll on children in Malakal.
All these things, 35%, are not implemented. Once we invest in education for ourselves, then it will not be impossible for us to achieve greater things as women.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's economic crisis has forced some children in Malakal town to venture into jobs to feed their families and pay school fees. Authorities in Upper Nile State say they have tried to ask humanitarian agencies to help keep children from working. Mamer Abraham Court reports from Malakal.
Seventeen-year-old Jima dropped out of school to put food on the table for his family. He says he wakes up early in the morning to fetch water from the River Nile in Ray and sells the water to town residents. Jima says he began the work after his father asked him and his other children to earn money. He says he earns over 10,000 South Sudan pounds on a good day and gives part of the money to his family for food.
We sell water. We buy a drum of water at 400 South Sudan pounds and sell it at 2,500 South Sudan pounds. If you fetch four times and sell them, you will get 10,000 SSP per day. It helps me pay my school fees in senior one. I save some money and give some to my family. I am at school, but I have not attended class only today because I want to work and buy a bag. My father has many responsibilities now. He told us to work because he is supporting 9 children in Juba and Sudan.
Many children in Malakal town are working to feed their families. Some children carry jerrycans of water on bicycles while others polish shoes. VOA spoke with several children as they worked. We don't use their family names to protect their identities. 14-year-old Atem, a primary 4 pupil, shines shoes on the streets of Malakal after school every afternoon.
I polish shoes on my return from school. I get 4,000 or 5,000 South Sudan pounds at the end of the day. I give my mother this money to save. The money is only spent when there is hardship. I paid my school fees this year. My father said he will pay my school fees. But I said, let me pay my school fees this year.
Seventeen-year-old Machar is the first-born son in his family. He says he supports his family of 7 by selling water in Malakal's residential areas.
I just came from Ngok and started this business 3 days ago. I hired the donkey and later shared the money with the owner. I have not been enrolled in school, but I shall enroll soon. My father was able to provide for us, but he is now old. He cannot manage to support us. I expect 50,000 or 100,000 South Sudan pounds at the end of the month. If I get this money, I shall buy sorghum for the family and also buy shoes and clothes for the children.
Tut Poish Luak is the Director for Child Protection at Upper Nile State's Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare. He says his office has tried to discourage children taking on jobs, but some children say they have no other means of survival.
They can even tell you that now we are the responsible people. Yeah, that is why now we are working in the market because we are serving our family. That is why now I even left the school because of this economic crisis. That is what they used to tell the people. Even some of them now, they even used to go to hospital. I even know 2 cases. Someone vomiting below that exactly. When the child was being taken to hospital, the doctor advised him not to work and using that donkey. It is very difficult. And the pain of survival is difficult.
Luak as non-profit groups that work with children in Upper Nile State to intervene to address the roots of child labor.
Even if we are just carrying the assessment, nothing has been done since. Even confirmed the report. I gave it to minister, and then up to today, I even called those of humanitarian that this one needs intervention from all of us because it is collective responsibility to everyone. But that one is very difficult, Jamaat, to be described actually. And even in the government, we have no clear direction to advise the foreign or to tell the kid that not to work in the market.
He also urges parents to provide for their children regardless of the country's economic crisis. However, that can be difficult for many. Last month, the National Minister for Finance and Planning, Bag Barnaba Chol, said the country is broke and there is no money to pay 400% salary increase for civil service, that is, in 2023-2024 budget. Many civil servants in the country have gone months without pay. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwart in Malakal.
From Malakal, we move back to Juba, where women in South Sudan say despite a requirement that 35% of positions in government be held by women, most are taken by men. As we celebrate the International Women's Day and its theme of Invest in Women, Accelerate Progress, we'll listen to some of their voices.
South Sudanese women says power-sharing percentage allocated to women by the 2018 agreement has been hijacked by men. Margaret Fauzia is the commissioner of Mundri East County. She says she's advocating for training and education opportunities to equip women to grab their 35% quota of power sharing.
35% has not been fulfilled in the whole Republic of South Sudan. If you look at the ministries, at the national, the independent commissions, the undersecretaries, the state governors, the deputy governors, the speakers of the state, and the county commissioners, all these things, 35% are not implemented. Once we invest in education for ourselves, then it will not be impossible for us to achieve greater things as women. So if we put our heads together to support each other and also move as a team, we'll be able to achieve a lot as women.
Maka Mustafa is a member of parliament from Morobo County. She says the 35% power sharing percentage was implemented by authorities in Central Equatoria State. Maka says a lot needs to be done for the development of women representation.
Let me say, in the parliament, we are 36 women, which is going on well. Even in the leadership, we are there. But because of this revitalized, you know how the allocations are being done. But in the leadership, the women are there. In those days, it was really tug of war.
Zahara Said, an executive director for South Sudanese Network for Elections and Democracy, Sunde, a local non-profit, blames the leadership of the country for doing very little to empower women.
We have the three major commissions that have been formed. Of all these commissions, it is only political party council that we have 40% of women. In the revitalized National Constitution Review Commission, we are short with 3%. We have 32%. In the National Elections Commissions, we only have 20%. Where is our 15%? We have men who are sitting in our 15%. And with this, with the due respect to all the women of South Sudan, these men should relinquish their positions and give it to women.
Veronica Redento Wunji, a national member of parliament representing Magui County, says women should work hard to grab their opportunities.
If an MP, for example, died in her place, they replaced with man, that is always a loss for us because they are supposed to replace with a woman to keep the 35%. I want women really to read hard because sometimes men are saying that they are not educated. They don't have capacity to take sovereign decision-making positions.
Margaret Apollo Sokiri is the chairperson of the Women Union in Central Equatoria State. She says women should follow up on some of the breaches in power sharing.
We want to form at least a women forum that may come out with a group or a committee that will always be following the appointments so that we get our rights. We should not wait to be given our rights. South Sudan has given us the chance and it is us to get it. Because if we wait for it to be given to us by our brothers, they will not do that. But it is a duty. I call each and everybody to be very sensitive. And it is our duty to sensitize all our women to know about their rights.
The chairperson of the Women Bloc of South Sudan says women should speak up with one voice to demand for their rights.
Some of us are victims of advocating, because the more we advocate for other women, the more we are being sidelined and the more we are being seen as we are making noise. And some of them, they do not want to be like that. They only want to reap the opportunity when we advocate and there is space. Yes, find themselves in and keep quiet and they're happy. We, the women who have the voice and have the space and who can talk, whether you are in parliament, you are in the executive, you are a governor, you are a commissioner, you are anybody in the system of government, please raise your voice and talk. Don't only look into your position that if I speak, I'll be removed from my position.
South Sudan's 2018 peace agreement allocated 35% quota for women's representation in the country's institution of governance. The theme of International Women's Day 2024 is Invest in Women, Accelerate Progress, Targeting Economic Disempowerment. The campaign theme for 2024 is Inspire Inclusion. Women leaders across South Sudan are scheduled to travel to Mundri East County by the end of March to mark this year's International Women's Day. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonye reporting from Juba.
Still on women issues, a black South African woman pilot who used to fly Nelson Mandela around says her thick skin does not allow her to be faced by discrimination. And this International Women's Day, she's urging young girls who are thinking about having careers in aviation to also ignore those who say their gender and race make them incapable of doing the job. Reporter Vicky Starch in Cape Town, South Africa, spoke to Captain Annabel Vundla via Zoom.
Vundla recalls the day she decided to become a pilot. She was with her mother at the airport and was just 7 years old.
Then I saw the pilots and they had their hats and they were looking so good. And I said, well, what do those guys do? And she said, no, they fly the airplane. I thought, geez, I want to fly the airplane. And she said to me, that's not for women. You know, women don't do that. I said, well, actually, I'm going to do it.
And that's exactly what she did. When Captain Vundla finished secondary school, she joined the South African Air Force.
I was the first black woman to graduate in the Air Force in the year 2000. I was also the first black female instructor in the Air Force. And I left the Air Force in 2010. And then I joined South African Airways. And now I'm the first black female captain of an airline in this country.
And why did she leave the Air Force?
I purely just moved to a commercial airline because, you know, when you're flying heads of state, you are on standby 24/7. And I had gotten married and we were planning on having children. I've got two kids and I cannot live on a standby.
She remains a reservist in the military, working as a part-time pilot in the presidential squadron. Vundla recalls flying the late South African president and Nobel Peace Prize winner, Nelson Mandela.
I flew him for 5 years. It was more of a lectured relationship as to his life and what I can do to be a better person in society.
Captain Vundla says the biggest obstacle preventing women from going into the male-dominated aviation industry is the high cost of pilot training if they don't go the military route.
The military, definitely there is a physical aspect to it. You've got to be able to run, you have to walk kilometers with your backpack, shooting. So you're a soldier first and then you're a pilot in the military. So the physical aspect of it, I think, puts a lot of people off.
She says the other obstacle is exposure.
And the exposure I talk about is from the African sense of a lot of girls, some girls don't even go to school, the male child would.
Captain Vundla advises those girls and young women brave enough to pursue their dream of becoming pilots to do well at math, science and geography at school and to never give up. Vicky Stark, VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the Biden administration is urging aid organizations to start buying medicines. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listeners. listener of South Sudan in Focus, we have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. U.S. President Joe Biden's administration is urging aid organizations to start buying medicine to treat HIV from African pharmaceutical companies. The administration says it would like to see at least 2 million HIV-infected people receiving antiretroviral medication made completely in Africa by 2030. Darren Taylor reports from South Africa.
In 2023, President Biden renewed his commitment to the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, 20 years after its establishment by President George W. Bush. Biden emphasized PEPFAR's the largest commitment by any nation to confront a single disease in history.
Over the past two decades, we've made incredible progress fighting the AIDS epidemic. Through PEPFAR, we've reduced transmissions, expanded testing, pioneered treatments, saving more than 25 million lives.
PEPFAR saved and continues to save most of these lives in sub-Saharan Africa by providing antiretroviral or ARV medicines to millions of HIV-infected people. But partly because of lack of capacity in Africa's pharmaceutical sector, the drugs are almost exclusively provided by international companies. This must change, says Stavros Nicolaou, head of Aspen South Africa, the continent's biggest pharmaceutical company.
It's really almost inconceivable that we have almost 70% of the world's HIV infection rate on the continent, but yet we are importing most of these medicines, medical devices and diagnostics. What's really concerning here is that if there were to be another pandemic and the world shuts its borders, there's no reason why that shutting of borders also can't apply to antiretrovirals or diagnostics. So we need to be prepared, certainly procuring drugs from African pharmaceutical companies in order to sustain these companies and give them longevity ought to be a priority.
Nicolaou is also a member of Pharmaceuticals Made in Africa, an association of African drug companies committed to local production of medicines. One of the questions he often gets at international conferences, he tells VOA, is whether Africa has the technology and capacity to make the many millions of ARVs it needs. Nicolaou's answer is that with a bit of help, the continent will soon achieve exactly that.
Look, I think Africa does lag, but certainly the potential exists in our country, as it does exist elsewhere on the continent. But it is a classic case of you've got to get all the stars to align, regulatory harmonization, mutual recognition, and a redefining of the procurement mechanisms, and then we can certainly succeed. And just very lastly, you know, manufacturing is all about economies of scale. Getting economies of scale so that South African and African manufacturers of pharmaceuticals can stand on their own two feet futuristically. They're not dependent on handouts, etc. Get volumes in, and then we can compete, I believe, continentally, regionally, and globally.
Nicolaou says the more medicines African companies make and sell, the more they'll be able to plow profits into upscaling, and the more patients in Africa and elsewhere will benefit. So he applauds the Biden administration's efforts to enhance Africa's drug independence. One of PEPFAR's key partners, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, has invested $45 million with the South African Medical Research Council as it tries to develop an HIV vaccine. This, says USAID, will provide more opportunities for scientists across sub-Saharan Africa to advance HIV vaccine research. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg, we move back to the state of Virginia here around Washington. Today is a consequential day in the early part of the race for both U.S. political parties' presidential nominations, a day political junkies have come to call Super Tuesday. VOA's Anthony Lobruto is at a polling station in the state of Virginia monitoring the election. My colleague Yahya Swihub spoke to Anthony a short time ago.
Today is the most consequential day in the race for both U.S. parties' presidential nominations, a day political junkies have come to call Super Tuesday. VOA's Anthony Labruto is at a polling station in Virginia monitoring the election. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Anthony.
Oh, thank you very much, Yehey. It's good to be with you.
So, Anthony, explain to our audience what Super Tuesday is and why is it important in the U.S. political process this year.
Absolutely. So Super Tuesday, like you said, is really one of the biggest and most consequential political events, singular political events in the United States. So 15 different states and one U.S. territory all vote on the same day for the preliminary round of the presidential election. It's really a marker or kind of check-in of how both of the major political parties are doing in terms of popularity and the likelihood of who will be elected, you know, come November for the general election. And it's today, like I said, that it's the best representative sample of what the country is thinking of the major candidates, you know, come November. So although there hasn't really been an official confirmation yet, the way the previous preliminary votes in other states have gone so far this election cycle, it's likely going to be a rematch of the former President Donald Trump and current incumbent President Joe Biden.
And what makes this really unique is, Anthony, for both Republicans and Democrats, they will award more than one-third of the total delegates available throughout the entire nominating contest all in one day.
Yes, and so this really makes it the most consequential day of, you know, leading up to that general election. You know, the one-third of the delegates, this can make or break, you know, say a Nikki Haley, who is trying to challenge Donald Trump for the majority of the Republican votes come in November, and even, you know, Dean Phillips, Marianne Williamson trying to challenge Joe Biden, although they haven't really gotten a lot of traction. But, you know, these delegates will then, who will be awarded, you know, to whoever gets the majority of the votes in the states, it will go on to the Democratic and Republican convention, you know, a lot stronger of a candidate. They will, you know, get a lot more support from the party's base, a lot more fundraising, and it will really, really solidify their campaign and solidify their fight against each other.
And Anthony, I understand you are at a polling station in Virginia. What is the scene there at the polling station where you are right now?
Absolutely. So right now I am in Arlington, Virginia, which is a little bit outside of Washington, D.C. in our Voice of America studios. And so it's been raining pretty steadily throughout the morning, and, you know, even intermittently, but it doesn't really look like it's impacted, you know, voting so far at this. I'm right now at a suburban library where it's been converted into a polling station for today. And so there's been a steady stream of people coming in and out. You know, there's been a few different political canvassers, both for, you know, the two major parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. As it gets a little closer to the midday lunchtime, officials are expecting it to get a little busier with the office workers, people on their lunch breaks, you know, coming in to vote kind of quickly. Inside the voting area itself, it's very, very well staffed with volunteers and election workers to make sure, you know, people are filling out their voter registrations. And then when it comes time later tonight to actually count the ballots themselves. You know, around me, too, I can't forget to mention, you know, there's a lot of different media here trying to highlight, you know, the election process, you know, both from Voice of America, the other different language services that we have, and local television stations with more expected to come throughout the day.
VOA's Anthony Labruto at a polling station in Virginia. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
15 states and one U.S. territory are holding presidential nomination contests Tuesday in some form. For both Republicans and Democrats, they will award more than one-third of the total delegates available throughout the entire nomination contest, all on one day. Vice President Kamala Harris reiterated Monday support for an immediate 6-week ceasefire in Gaza, meeting with a top member of Israel's war cabinet as the conflict teeters on the five-month mark. But analysts and protesters note that stopping the conflict hinges on negotiations the Biden administration won't discuss and that may not yield a deal before the White House stated deadline. The start of Ramadan. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
Ceasefire, a word that Palestinians have been crying out for months as Israeli strikes target Gaza, may be within reach. Over the weekend, Vice President Kamala Harris became the first Biden administration official to publicly call for Israeli and Hamas forces to lay down arms in the conflict, sparked October 7th when the Palestinian militants launched a killing spree in Israel.
And given the immense scale of suffering in Gaza, there must be an immediate ceasefire. For at least the next 6 weeks, which is what is currently on the table.
That deal comes with conditions. On Monday, White House officials told reporters that Hamas is still mulling Israel's proposal, which includes the release of hostages. The administration declined to discuss details of negotiations. But this debate over Gaza's fate is very public. On Monday, as Harris met with a member of Israel's war cabinet, a small clutch of protesters gathered outside the White House to voice their discontent. Mona Sadek is executive director of the American Palestinian Women's Association.
Ceasefire. Maybe just they want to buy time for the election. This is not it's a game. We don't buy it.
Analysts say while it's significant that Harris threw her weight behind the critical word, her words may also come with condition. Trita Parsi is executive vice president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft.
But it's also important to take a look at how she qualified it, because the administration for some time has been saying that they're looking for a ceasefire, but it's within a specific deal that they want that to take place in. If her call is simply a reiteration of that, then the only significance that comes with it is the fact that for the first time, a senior administration official has actually managed to accurately and appropriately express empathy with victims on both sides of the conflict.
And then there is another question, one the White House itself is asking. Will Hamas, which the U.S. has designated as a terror group, take the deal to stop an assault that has killed tens of thousands of civilians? Parsi again.
The demands that have been expressed so far by the administration, which is the release of all hostages in return for a six-week ceasefire, I find unlikely to be accepted by Hamas because they're essentially giving up all their leverage for only a temporary end in the fighting rather than a more permanent state. So I think that's going to be a very tricky thing.
Will the smoke clear by the start of the holy month? Or will there be more fire? Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
That's all we prepared for you on this Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. I now leave you with a traditional Baka song from my village in Meridi County. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Cornelius, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.